As promised, we have got Professor Hamamoto back. Thank you if you've just clicked over from Lionel. And many of you watched the esteemed professor. Good grief, it must have been less than a week ago now. We did a part one on Charlie Kirk, linking it to the diabolical background of the Utah Freemasons. And I believe we're going to get into the Knights of Columbus in this episode. So the professor has kindly come back on very short notice, and we're going to do an even deeper dive into the background of the secret societies of the LDS Church in Utah. Thank you, Professor. And all of the professor's links are in the description box. Cheers.
Mr. Atwood, it's a pleasure to be back with you. And I wish a warm welcome to all the friends and neighbors around the world. We're going to go real deep today. And we're going to talk about the connection between Freemasonry, the LDS, which was established briefly previously, but it's the Knights Templar, not the Knights of Columbus. We don't want to just, maybe they're connected, I don't know. But more specifically, there is an established, documented historical connection between Freemasonry and the Knights Templar. Now, there's some argument that the modern version, the iteration, is not connected to the one that we learned about during the so-called Holy Wars, right, of the late medieval period. Now, we can dispute that, but the point is that the Knights Templar, writ large, in quotation marks, has entered the popular culture in a way that I only dimly understood, right? That's the bad news. The good news is that now we can bring in a whole new generational cohort to fill in these historical, cultural, and political blanks that have been deliberately obscured by the curriculum, at least in the United States. I don't know if in Britain whether the Knights Templar are discussed or studied in any serious fashion, but in the American educational system, they are absent. And even at the university level, they are consigned to, let's say, the classics or medieval study. Whereas, as we're finding out in this season of assassinations, or should we say the season of Hashashin, which is where the word comes from, right, assassin, that they're central to the story, central to the political, economic, cultural, financial history of not just the United States, but the world, the new Professor, world order. Yeah. Pardon me, go ahead.
I imagine that many of the viewers are not familiar with the terminology. Could we define the Knights Templar? What does that even mean?
Well, this was a society, I guess you can refer to it as a secret society, that convened. I think there were just maybe a dozen of them at first that were ostensibly formed in order to protect the pilgrims to the Holy Land, right? These are religious pilgrims, and they had a tendency to be robbed en route. And to make a very long and well-documented history very short, they eventually wound up safeguarding the material wealth of these pilgrims. And then they developed a very clever system of what now we know today is international commerce or banking system. They're the fathers of banking, just to put it in a nutshell. That relationship, and nor did the organization, that didn't end there. In fact, and this is why I'm bringing it up now, it migrated to the New World, North America, the United States of America, and more specifically, as we're talking about, it settled in Zion, which is another name for Utah. Zionism, it's not just the Holy Land, but is Utah. That's the equidistant cross, Templar cross. And by the way, some of you might recognize that symbol as being on the main sails of the Niña Pinta and Santa Maria.
Ooh.
Right? The ships that were responsible for colonizing the Caribbean and the United, what later became the United States, run by the Crypto Templar, Cristoforo Colombo, or as we call him, Christopher Columbus. So that, yeah, that's temple. And this symbology is found in archaeological sites all over North America. And by that, I mean, we're talking about Canada as well as the United States. Maybe some of you viewers have heard about the Kensington runes, R-U-N-E-S. These are inscriptions on stones, on rocks. Okay, that's an early manifestation of the pre-Columbus. Oh, those are signets or seals. The Kensington runes are the ones that are carved into natural formations and rocks. But much, much later, the Templars migrated across the North American continent, and they wound up in what they refer to as Zion, or the state of Utah. Now, the reason why it's important to understand this is because there's all this discussion currently about, oh, the Republicans did it, the right-wing extremists did it, or the Democrats did it, the left-wing, there's your Templar Knight representation of it, and there's all kinds of popular. In fact, let me take the opportunity to show you how thoroughly imbued Knight Templars are into the popular culture. This is an entire book. It's an academic book, too. Knights Templar in the popular culture. It gets into fiction, such as our own Walter Scott, Ivanhoe. Ivanhoe is about the Knights Templar. All right? So we have this continuity. But we see the continuation of the Templar mythos. And by mythos, I don't mean false. I mean an animating force behind the banking revolution that's taking place right now, that's going to be based on the ultimate empire, the empire of AI, mm-hmm. artificial intelligence, which is where, of course, the state of Utah comes in. Guess where the largest data center in the United States is located? Yes, the state of Utah.
Utah.
Guess which institutions of higher learning are heavily invested in converting the entire Utah economy, which used to be agriculture, forestry, mining. They're going to convert it into these colossal data centers. So there's this wholesale transformation inflection point, as some people call it. It's more than that, that we're being taken through right now. And the central battleground is the state of Utah. I think that's why that Netflix series was put on there. It's kind of like a historical transposition of the battles of the present and the future, transposing it back to mid-19th century Utah, right, with the Mormon Wars, so-called. This is really the heart of the age of the Hasashin, the current age. This is really at the heart of the Tyler Robinson situation, the situation with Thomas Matthew Crooks, all these assassins, Luigi Mangione. There's this epical shift into the AI empire. It's no longer a geophysical. The furries are kind of thrown in to sweeten the pot, so to speak, and you have these other characters with their stories of a gender fluidity and transformation that help to muddy the waters and make it endlessly fascinating. But if I can skip ahead, there is a bright side to this whole story of depravity. I'm proposing that people of the Tyler Robinson generation, Gen Z, as they are disparagingly referred to, that they join our fight in order to forensically figure out what's going on. And they're going to be Gen Z people are, including Tyler Robinson, instead of shooting people, they're going to be self-studying, self-examining their own gamer culture, right? I'm talking about the younger kids, 13, 14, the ones that are really into game. They grew up with it. And Mr. Atwood, this is something that's alien to me, right? I grew up with television. I can barely play Pong or Donkey Kong or whatever it is. But these people, the Z, Generation Z, grew up on single first-person shooter games or third-person shooter games. I'm sure, and of course the FBI would be oblivious to it because it's mostly boomers that run it. But they need to talk to the younger FBI agents or even Cash Patel, even though he seems to be marginalized, and ask them about whether these people like Tyler Robinson are playing these video games and which ones are they. Right now, they're only focusing on the porn sites. He looked on the 50 Shades of Gay furry porn site, right? Because that's what the boomers of the FBI grew up on. But they need to be looking at the game culture. And I think Cash and Kerry Patel will go for it because I think he's a game head too. He's what they call a live action role player. He's a LARPer. And it was proven to me when he said, "Yes, sir, I'll meet you in Valhalla." You know? I mean, that is such a game culture phrase. That comes right out of Assassin's Creed. Now, Mr. Atwood, are you familiar with the Assassin's Creed franchise?
Yes.
Somewhat? You are?
Yes.
Okay. Did you know that one of your fellow countrymen is the person who, there he is. He's the game head. He is the live action role player. He even has a hot chick as part of his Second Life 2L virtual reality FBI. So instead of resisting that, let's get into the head of the Gen Z through Cash Patel. I'll see you in Valhalla, Charlie Kirk. Yes, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Didn't Assassin's Creed come after Mortal Kombat? I used to play Mortal Kombat in the 90s.
Yes, Mortal Kombat, I believe, was the premier, is it first-person shooter game that really kind of inaugurated. And, of course, as the processing power got better, better programming. By the way, the company behind Assassin's Creed is, it's a Canadian operation. It's a Five Eyes. It's called Ubisoft. So for you people out there, and I'm interested too, I'm starting to read up on it. Find the history behind Ubisoft. Where's the money coming from? Because it's really expensive to put these games together. Look at the talent, the investment, all of it, the investment patterns. But let's not overlook a very important research, our own children, because they're the ones who've been socialized into this VR world. Why all these shootings? Why all these snipings from high place? By the way, there was one today in Dallas, Texas. I don't know if you heard about it. Someone shot on a ICE facility in Dallas, and he killed himself, reportedly. I don't know, because this is newly breaking information. Is that Ubisoft?
Yeah, the stock market price has gone down from almost 100 to €9.
Yes, it's really crashed.
Why is it crashed?
Well, the authorities on YouTube, and by the way, these are all like 15-year-old, 16-year-old kids who are teaching me this stuff. They have elaborate $30,000 studios and consoles, and their full-time job. They're making big bucks. They're making tons of money. These teenagers, I don't have their names, but I'm starting to watch their material. They're the ones who have studied the Ubisoft phenomenon and are telling us why aesthetically that the company's dropping. So they have all these, there's a movie series. It's been done to death. It's no longer cool. There's been novelizations. manga, you name it. So a new franchise needs to be brought into being. And let me propose a new franchise. It's going to be a franchise that foregrounds a 22-year-old semi-autistic person on the spectrum who got a full-ride scholarship at the university, who's disaffected politically, but instead of shooting people, he decides to use his analytical skills to make America great again. How's that for a great, for a pro-social video game? But all the kids, excuse me, my phone is going crazy.
Yeah, while Ubisoft has gone down, Take-Two Interactive Software, Take-Two Interactive Software has done the opposite. It's gone really high, and that's Grand Theft Auto. Yeah.
Yes, that's another franchise. And by the way, in the U.S., especially in urban, quote-unquote, that means ghetto neighborhoods, Grand Theft Auto is manifested in all this. They're called sideshows, where the automobiles do all these tricks and performances, motorcycles and all that. And again, life is beginning to imitate art, as in the case of Grand Theft Auto. And that also, I believe, has been made into a movie. So this is all part of the entertainment complex, and they will ride this horse until it just dies, right? And then they'll come up with a new franchise. So the larger point here is that when we're talking about the Knights Templar, the Freemasons, the LDS, and we were talking about Tyler Robinson, who himself was LDS, his family was LDS, we're not talking about an arcane area of study. We're talking about 2025. By the way, if people want to look on TubeView, there's all kinds of these video simulations, and these are the 20-year-olds who have these channels with a couple of million subscribers who do these live action review. They're like reaction videos and critiques of these various games. And it's, you know, talk about nerding out. They'll know every single element of the entire Assassin's Creed franchise, and they pick it apart just like a very sophisticated art connoisseur or a wine maven or an art critic would. These are kids who are like 20 years old making bank on YouTube. Now, the guy who's done the novelization, this is only something I found out this morning in prepping for this talk here, Mr. Atwood, is one of your countrymen. Perhaps you could even invite him to the show. I think he would be an incredible source of information. What is his name here? I had it written down in my notes someplace. I seem to have misplaced it, but he is the guy that's done, I think, 10 volumes now. I might have to order it, but I've ordered volume one of the novelization of Assassin's Creed. But the point I'm making is, guess what? He comes up right out of Cambridge. He's fully steeped in this arcane history that most of us of my generation just think it's just mythology, it's fairy tales, it's something for the game heads, right? It's not. It's central, it's core to understanding quote-unquote Western civilization and Near Eastern world civilization, right? It's so important to understand this institution. Fortunately, you also have a fellow countryman. His name's Malcolm Barber. And by the way, these are not bullshit books. Okay, this is published by Cambridge University Press. I go with the academic publishers. Not that the other ones aren't good, but this, what Cambridge University Imprimatur says is that this has been vetted by peers in the field, specialists, right? And his name's Malcolm Barber. This one's called The Trial of the Templars. And this is where a lot of those people on YouTube who pass themselves off as experts in the Knights Templar and the Freemasons, you know, 90% of those people are repeaters, right? Here's another book by Malcolm Barber that people can look at. It's called The New Knighthood, right? another Cambridge University Press book. Here's another one of your countrymen or countrywomen who are a untapped resource in this type of research that we're doing here. Her name is Helen Nicholson. This is called The Knights Hospitalier, right? Similar, different, distinct, but similar. And on and on. I mean, I have a small, here's an older book. It's kind of a classic by now. These are the authors that Dan Brown, remember him, the Da Vinci Code? They're the ones that he cribbed from. It's Michael Barnier and Richard Lee. It's called The Temple and the Lodge, meaning the Knights Templar and the Freemasonic Lodge. So the point here is that this is part of our intellectual heritage. And for our purposes, this is the understanding of these interlocked secret societies will help us understand this current transformation from hard money assets to crypto in certain cases and beyond, right? Because I think that's what the battle is about now. It's not about Tyler Robinson living with a guy who's transitioning, who's into furries, right? Mm. That's a diversion. It's important, but it's a diversion. It's not about Thomas Matthew Crooks. It's not about these personalities. It's about the collapse of the contemporary Bretton Woods system. It's already what has collapsed, but the monetary linked system into offloading all this bad debt, and of course leaving the public with it, right, to a entirely new system that's just needs the proper amount of crisis to be put in by the population willingly. They're not going to rebel. They're not going to come out with the torches and the pitchforks. They're going to say, yes, please, we need a universal basic income. We need crypto, right? So there's all these different, all these economic and financial scams that are taking place so that old people say, hey, listen, I just got built out of my life savings from some guy in India who ordered me to empty out my bank account and sent the cash to a courier. I watch these all the time. It's really prevalent. Right. These are all state-sponsored operations, just like the current assassinations lying beneath it all. These are state operations. These are the Hashashins. And I'm not saying it's the product of any one religious group, order, secret society, because they are all competing for the same prize. Right. And if you think the Hashashins are something out of fairy tales or the Hollywood movies, think again. Institutions like Harvard University take all kinds of cash, money, hard American currency from the wider Ishmaeli diaspora. People talk about, oh, Jews are in charge of this, right? Well, you're not talking about the Mormons. We already established that. But even fewer people talk about the Ishmaeli diaspora and their huge economic control, not just of the United States, but of countries like Saudi Arabia. The Ishmaeli leadership, guess where they're all educated? At Harvard. And they dump all kinds of money. They have centers that they endow. Check it out. And one prominent, for those of you, let's say your parents' age, Mr. Atwood, or your grandparents' age, would remember the glamorous Hollywood actress Rita Hayworth. We're talking about the 40s now, right? Marvelous. She used to be married at one point to Orson Welles, for example. Well, she was married to Prince Ali Khan, and he was the head of the Ishmaeli. So early on, and he has a similar type, the family, the Khan family, has a similar stature within British society. So I'm sure they control a lot of people in the House of Commons, maybe even the House of Lords. They might have even been able to marry in to the nobility by now, just like marrying stars and celebrities, you know, the British Princess Diana was supposed to be married to Dodi Fayyad, and she was impregnated by Dr. Hasnat Khan, right? We already saw this transition point, this intermarriage. And of course, the Rothschilds married in to the ruling class generations ago already. So this is what I'm understanding through the lens of all this chaos that's being manufactured. And the reason why we see a Pam Bondi and a Cash Patel and Dan Bongino, although he's not really a factor anymore, that are slow walking all this, is it because they understand that at bottom, this is a state operation. This is a crypto state operation. What do you think?
I think that more people need to subscribe to Professor Hamamoto's channel. Here it is. Look, he's got 63.1K subs. There's his latest videos. Tons of content over there. We have got 2,500 people watching live right now, and I'm going to put the links in the live chat. So please subscribe to the Professor's channel. And there's also a playlist of all of the professor's videos on our channel link there as well. I know some people have been putting questions in the chat. Please keep your questions coming. And we'll try and keep the professor on for as long as possible. So the more questions, the longer we'll keep him on if he can take it. Goldie wants to know, what does the death of Charlie Kirk symbolizes then?
It not only symbolizes, but it reflects the takeover of the global banking system of the United States of America. Ironic, isn't it? Because Charlie Kirk is representative, supposedly, of American economic and political nationalism. He believed in sovereign America, in sovereign states. That was his program. People, you know, and he was a devout Christian, apparently. We don't deny that. But equally as important, he wanted America to be what America is about, the business of America, and other countries secondarily so, right? But that stands in the way of the globalization process, the final, so the end game. The capstone on the dollar bill, right? They want to put that on there. They meaning the bankers, the Templars, whoever else they might be. That's what Charlie Kirk symbolizes and represents, literally, not just figuratively.
So if Charlie had a huge reach, especially with the young people, and he was having a change of heart, he was having a change of heart in certain geopolitical directions. Is it possible that there was a conspiracy to preempt this change of heart being broadcast to these masses of young people and influencing them thusly, and hence the conspiracy was to prevent that?
Charlie Kirk's influencer are people who are in their 30s, right? Again, the group that I think that's going to be making the monumental change in America and in world society are in their late teens and 20s. Charlie Kirk at 31 is looked upon as an old man by the gaming community, right? Even though Tyler Robinson said he didn't like Charlie Kirk, he didn't like him partly because he represents a different, older generation. Right. Think about yourself when you were 16 and saw a 30-year-old man, right? You thought about him as being an oldster and being completely out of touch. We had a saying back in the day, don't trust anybody over 30. He was over 30. So he has more appeal, Charlie Kirk, to people like me, boomers, who said, oh my gosh, there's hope, right? The younger generation's coming up. But I'm looking further down the road. I'm looking at the game heads who should throw off their furry costumes and start using their forensic skills to make America great again. That's my appeal, right? Second point I wanted to make, this is the positive part, is that for the first time in the case of Charlie Kirk, there was no widespread hue and cry for, well, let's get a commission together. Let's get the government involved in investigating. Let's have a Warren Commission. Please, Mr. FBI, give us the files. Notice that that whole process was bypassed with the assassination of Charlie Kirk. So what it not only symbolizes but represents literally is the maturity amongst the American public in realizing that the government is in on this stuff. All these so-called agencies, including the DOJ, they're part of this New World Order system. So people didn't articulate it, but they just said, okay, we're just going to start looking at all the footage ourselves. We're going to look at the trajectories. We're going to talk to each other and go on air, which is healthy. It's important. And then Kash Patel is almost like the live-action role player is now a non-acting role player. He's been sidelined. I think he's begun to realize that his position is just that's symbolic more than anything else, not Charlie Kirk. So that's the good news. We now have a decentralized intelligence agency. It's called the people. It's a that is the true populist revolution, right? Am I right?
Yes. And Deborah wants to know, do you think the hit team involved US CIA?
I wouldn't even pin it down to any sort of initial. I know we're sort of trained to think about the initial, the alphabet agency people involved. I think it's more decentered and more diffused in that sense, because these agencies know that we understand the history. We've seen the documentary. We've read the books. There's a widespread skepticism. So they're going to put the gun in the hand of a guy in a furry costume, right? Or make him out to be some malcontent like a Ryan Ruth, who, by the way, was convicted just recently. He was the guy that was stalking Donald Trump down in Mar-a-Lago and was going to plug him, right? He thought he was. He was convicted, and he's off to prison where he'll meet his fate, no doubt. Question.
Dave wants to know, any link between the Macron sex identity debacle a la Candace and her friend Charlie's death?
No. Again, another distraction. That is the function of Candace Owens, just to stir up the you-know-what with a stick. Because, what if Madame Macron does turn out to be a man, or her genealogy is not what she represents? Well, what then? What happens? So what? Right. In the meantime, all the energy and the attention is being focused on this situation. That's part of her function. And, you know, I've been harsh with her on your show and my own particular. And I'll double down. I think she's a noxious force in American political culture. Candace Owens. Yes, indeed. And I hope this her people are watching me. I know they are. All these people are watching me, but they will not have a truthful yellow man speak the truth. You're not going to see me on any other channel except the Sean Atwood Show, because I am dangerous.
I watch Candace every night, and I think she's doing great work. So let's have Candace and the professor have a debate on this channel. Come on, Candace. Sure.
Well, you know, she can debate herself, because I'll give you my impression of Candace Owens. You know, it's like, I can't talk that fast, right? And there's papers on this. The faster you talk, the more it bypasses rational scrutiny. So this is what you see in the carnivals, salesmen, pitchmen, right? Carnies, that's how they operate. This is a carnival of fast-talking LARPers. So if she wants to come on the show, that's fine, because it'll do wonders for your number. I'll just sit there and go, okay, rap on, baby. Go on.
But I'm not going to take it seriously. I'm not going to take a word with what she's saying seriously. And neither should these people who are worried about this man who wears a really bad wig who calls herself Madame Macron. By the way, I read the book that she bases it on. She doesn't even do any original research. I mean, it's a guy who wrote the book, and she's like taken authorship of it, but she's not the author of it. She's the exploiter of a theme that we all love and enjoy. We love stories about men who dress as women and women who dress as men. We love it. We're kind of like, what's his name? That Hollywood star that got busted. Oh, Eddie Murphy. Yeah, Eddie Murphy got found with a transvestite on Hollywood Boulevard. Remember that?
there's been many a bust on Hollywood, a bust of a star on Hollywood Boulevard. I remember Hugh Grant as well. All right, so yes. Cats, would you say there is a connection to Footlights Drama Society in Cambridge too? Francis Barber had an honorary degree from a UK uni in 2001, too.
I'm not familiar with the Francis Barber case directly, but I will tell you that the drama societies, the arts societies, definitely are involved in all this intelligence skullduggery and espionage. All you have to do is look at the Cambridge spy ring that most people are familiar with, but the same in the US, CIA. These are all, they call them the alphabet agencies because these are men of letters, right? The liberal arts who are really adept in taking these old formula from the Knights Templar and Freemasonry, the secret societies, OTO, and recycling them and putting them out there for our consumption. Those are your dramatic drama societies. Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so you've got a question. Will the autopsy be falsified?
That I don't know. The JFK autopsy was falsified. If they can do that with the president, then why not? I'd be skeptical of whatever they come up with.
We've got all these videos of people having theories of where the bullet went in, out, stayed in. Magic bullet, blood splatter, no blood splatter. What is your theory of the trajectory of the bullet, Professor?
I think it's unlikely that he was shot from the rooftop by a guy who was what are called an emo, right? I saw his mugshot, and they have the inches height. He's like a 5'2". He probably weighs about 120 pounds. The rifle is taller than him, and he had to hump it up to the roof and then to carry it down and transport. I don't think so. I think this is just a guess, is that gun was planted up there and he was set up as a patsy, and the real pulling of the trigger came from somewhere else. I don't know who that is, but probably from height and from a distance. Now, I also checked out through the Google Maps and other video representations of the amphitheater. And this is in part answer to your question here, your question about the ritual aspects of it. But
let me just read the question for the people who are not privy to the screen. So I just heard that the film Snake Eyes had a guy called Charles Kirkland shot in the neck on 10th of September by someone called Tyler. Has anyone seen the film? Is this true? So this has been coming up throughout the evening, but you were finishing a point there, sorry, about the ritual aspect. Oh, no. So let's finish that first.
Oh, sure. In the question previous to, and I wrote in my notes, Snake Eyes, I'm going to see it. I'm going to see if there's any connection there. But the previous questioner asked about the possible ritualistic aspect of the assassination, and that occurred to me. So I started researching the grounds upon which he was assassinated, and I looked at it visually, and it is indeed an amphitheater, a stylized amphitheater, such that was used in the pagan era, right? Greek tragedy, drama. They pioneered this use of this ritualistic use of public cathartic expressions, catharsis, right? That comes right out of the poetics, Aristotle. Correct me if anybody out there is a Cambridge University graduate, but I think it comes from Aristotle, right? The function of drama and theater and ritual like this is catharsis. And where was the execution realized? In an amphitheater on the campus of Utah Valley University. I haven't seen any mention of that, so that's just something to file away.
That's good. This movie, Snake Eyes, have you heard of it? You're going to look into that, you said.
I jotted it down. I'm going to see if I can find it.
I'm on the wiki page of it now to try and see if I can confirm any of this.
Let's have the real-time intel on that.
Well, it's an extremely long wiki page.
Well, that's good. That's promising.
So I'll probably have a look at that later on. I don't want to take too much time on it. All right, we'll look at this later, folks. We'll get back to you on that one. Let me get to the next question. I'm sorry, were you about to say something?
Oh, no. No, I would like to see the, and of course, if you're underage, if you're not an adult, please get the permission of your parents. But I would like to see the teenagers who are on these, that are part of gamer culture, to do this type of real-time research on what they're looking at and contribute to the public intelligence, the decentralized intelligence agency of the people. That's what I want to see the 15-year-olds, the 21-year-olds doing with their skills, which are unique to them generationally, Gen Z. This is how we incorporate them instead of alienating them by making fun of their sexuality or their being into furries or having the Gen Z stare and all the other distancing type of maneuvers.
So you've got a few points about Trump here. Ronnie's saying, Charlie was a Freemason. Listen to Trump's speech. He said, and I quote, Charlie was a builder. And John Fox wants to know, is Trump really on our side?
Oh, my gosh. I didn't know, or I have not even heard, that Charlie Kirk was a Freemason. I don't rule it out. Him being a builder? I don't know. That's such an amorphous way of putting it. I don't think that meant that he was a stonemason or a mason necessarily, but I could be wrong. Is Trump really on our side? Trump is on his side. Trump is on the dynasty's side. That's the Trump bloodline. And which includes, by the way, not just the German side, but guess what? The Scottish side. And Trump has a lot of real estate holdings in the ancestral homeland, Scotland, because his mother was a Scot, as a lot of people understand. But it's a very important biographical piece of information. It fits in with the Templar through line in American history and civilizational history. Donald Trump, he's more likely a Templar than a Mason, or maybe both. Who knows? So is he really on our side? In part, but he's on the side of the bloodline.
Here's a super chat question. Masood on the live by camera on September the 9th, 2001 in Afghanistan. We are looking at false lead. Are you familiar with that, Professor?
Wow. Is this the exploding camera? I'm not familiar with that.
September 9th, 2001.
Okay, what happened there? Refresh my memory.
BB, thanks for the super chat, but you're going to have to expand on that because we need some more background. Goldie wants to know, Hamamoto, do you think this assassination was planned for a long time, that Charlie Kirk was built up to be taken down?
Wow, that's a really good question. I think he was built up. I don't know the length of planning. I don't think it takes that. I mean, I think a plan can be worked out within 3 months. Implementing it is the difficult part. But all our heroes are built up with the possibility that they will be rug pulled at some point. And that was the whole reason for people like Epstein, right? He's got the whole blackmail material on him. So, yeah, I think all these people who attain that position of power are walking on thin ice, so to speak.
Would you speculate as to who could be next?
I think they're going to give the U.S. a little rest for a while. And I had an insight today for some reason that it's some of this is going to migrate into Western Europe. I think the UK in specific, right? Just like the London attacks, what, 7/7?
Yep.
There's these little echoes that's my psychic intuition. I have no rational basis for that. That's just something that came to me this morning while I was on my walk. Like, what next? Where?
Thank you for the super chat, Team Hazard. Whatever happened to Lorraine Moret?
I don't know who you're talking. I have no idea who you're talking about. Yeah. Yeah, you'll have to expect. Thank you for the super chat, though.
do we know anything about Charlie Kirk's parents?
Wow. That's an interesting absence. I hadn't considered that. His widow seems to be positioned for succession in some fashion, right? But his parents, I don't know. I don't know anything about them. All I know is that his wife, Erica, was a beauty queen, apparently, right?
Yep.
And obviously quite talented and well-spoken, yes.
Camera prepped like pages.
Oh, yes. That's what I thought you meant. Well, isn't that part of the Mossy's modus operandi? Exploding electronics? Yeah. That sounds like right out of their playbook. So, maybe you're hinting at that we all better be careful with our electronics.
Indeed.
It's not just something they might explode. This is like something out of a William Burroughs novel, The Exploding Television. Yeah.
They're taking control of our cars as well. They can just run us off the road if they want. So Deborah is saying, it's all theater. Do you think the link to Charlie's wife to Romania and the kids could be why this was portrayed on the stage?
Now you have me in ignorance here. I didn't know that she had a connection to Romania. Is she Romanian ethnicity or nationality original?
ES is saying she is part Lebanese and Syrian. I don't know about that. I don't know if that's confirmed.
Wow. Well, that's like the guy who I thought was Irish, Kevin. He's on Shark Tank. He's half Lebanese. Well, that's an interesting combination because she's like a solid blonde. I thought they were typically dark-haired, but I don't know if that had any connection there. I know that most Lebanese people are Christian. They belong typically to the Orthodox Church.
I'm asking the AI right now if this is
okay.
If this is correct. What is Charlie
so short coin says that this is a great life.
Top web results. Let's see. Look, I'm not. I don't know if this is confirmed, love. Let's see. What do we know about Charlie Kirk's family? It says someone's saying here on Facebook that this part Arab. Miss Kirk, born Erica France, played. American businesswoman. I don't know what the real. Raised in Arizona, Caucasian descent, white American woman born and raised in Arizona. Yeah, there's a lot of speculation about her ancestry, but I don't know what's for real or not, though. So I'm not going to pledge to any of that. Mm-hmm. All right, let me see. Oh, thank you for the super chat, short coin. Let's go over another question. This is from Bright Moore Dinosaur. Many people repeatedly saw Kirk's unaliving, simulating the horrific reoccurring images of PTSD. Was this also an exercise in mass traumatization, an MK Ultra move? Was it?
I believe so, but for the young people that were watching it, it's more like a re-traumatization. Again, I'll go back to my original insight. This generation grew up on violent first-person shooter, third-person shooter video games, especially the male people. So this was a reenactment of what they've been socialized into. So I would call it a re-traumatization. Now, the downside of this is that as soon as the event happened, all these little signs went up that says mental health available. This is where the mental health mafia went in there to take advantage of this situation, because they are instrumental. And by the mental health mafia, I also include Big Pharma and the people who manufacture the drugs that most of these undergraduates are on at all the university campuses, right? They're exploiting it and exploiting them. And they're also taking down your personal information and putting it in the database. And it's going to go upstate to the National Security Agency data center, which is located in Ohio or Utah. And this Kash Patel saying, well, we flew in there and we grabbed all the data and we transported it back to Quantico or FBI headquarters. It's BS. All the keystrokes, all the text messages that Tyler Robinson and his boyfriend, anybody that ever has been on online, that information stored right there in that state, not in FBI headquarters. Kash Patel has no function except as a live-action role player. He is a video game See You in Valhalla character.
BB, there's not much known about Erica Kirk's parents, according to Google. So we can't answer those types of questions. But thank you for the super chat. And let's see. Traumatization, autopsy, Erica's lots coming in. So the cross that we showed earlier, is it related to the Maltese cross, the Columbus?
Indeed it is. There is a epical civilizational battle, the Battle of Malta, where the forces of Islam are repulsed by the forces of Christendom on Malta, the island of Malta. And there was, you know, as most people know, the Order of Malta, which was later revived by various regimes, including the Wehrmacht in Wilhelmine in Germany, and then later Third Reich. And this symbol is ancient. It goes back into probably pre-Christian period, the pagan period.
Why wasn't there any cell phone footage taken by people in the audience? Cell phone footage would have been taken, but Candice said footage was confiscated by the feds and people were told that they couldn't put it out there. So
I thought there was cell phone footage. There was this one character who jumped up and was waving or something.
Was Charlie Kirk a public sacrifice?
He was sacrificed on an altar in an amphitheater. Yes. There was a ritualistic undertone to this.
So if you're saying, Professor, if the gamers then are desensitized because they're just shooting up people all day long on these games, this new generation of games, but the act of this happening in public was to traumatize that generation. Isn't there an opposing force at work there whereby they're desensitized from the video game? So when they see something like that, to them, it's part of the video game world in their minds.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. They, you know, it might appear that they're numbed by it, but I think there's a sort of a combination of desensitization and re-traumatization. It's like you can't hold those two contradictions in one place, but the behavioral scientists that work for the DOD figured it out. We're going to encapsulate all these people, mostly children, male children, into the gamer world, and they're going to create these RL, real-life scenarios on top of it. I'm saying that we, the public, the decentralized intelligence agency, can recuperate those strategies and have these keyboard warriors of 18 years old, 20 years old, to do their own forensic analysis and conclusions, right? Because the boomers are not going to come up with it. They can't. From the sensory perspective, experiential perspective, and there maybe even the from a neurological perspective, they didn't grow up in gamer epistemology, gamer culture. So it's beyond their ken to really understand this PSYOP. It's a new stage of PSYOP. I know people keep talking about, oh, it's brain mind control, it's MK Ultra, but that's an old analogy, right? Let's move away from it. Let's stop fighting the last war. There's a new war that's going on right now. Call it cyber war. And the people who are on the front lines are these boys, mostly, who were raised in this gamer culture. By the way, I'm not the only one. I checked it out. And there's some articles that are beginning to appear to try to connect gamer culture to these types of violent acts. And you're going to see a lot more literature being published on in this connection here because of the explosion of violence amongst a certain age group.
Faye wants to know, could it be today's group of high-level players in government roles orchestrate PSYOPs to amuse themselves?
Oh, absolutely. That's part of the payoff for the people who work in the intelligence agencies, right? They call it fun and games. Especially if you come from a wealthy white shoe background, you want some sort of psychic payoff. And the biggest jollies of all is getting over on the sheeple. So, yeah. I mean, for the rank and file people who are doing the keyboarding and the programming, that's their job. You know, they think they're doing God's work. But for the people who are making the calls, right, at the highest level, these are the men and women of letters, and they enjoy the game.
And don't forget that the highest levels of these secret societies, they harvest the energy of children and perform all kinds of diabolic rituals. So, yes. Yeah, these people are, a lot of these people are getting off on these things.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Does the royal family fit into this PSYOP?
At the very top, yes. I don't think they are burdened with the details, but they're the ultimate legitimizing power that says, okay, they are the crown, literally, that says, all right, whatever it takes to defend the realm. And in their minds, I'm sure they believe the realm is the entire planet Earth and the universe, including the dark side of Lucifer. That's part of their realm too.
BB's wondering whether the Maltese cross ties in with the Red Cross.
Possibly. I don't know historically if it does, but the cross symbology is common to a lot of different organizations and societies. I don't think they have the little cutouts on the end, the Maltese cross. The Red Cross, I think the Red Cross is more like 90-degree angles, if I'm correct. But, of course, in the Near East and the lands of that are Muslim, it's called the Red Crescent, right? Not the Red Cross.
Yeah, the Maltese Cross, The one that's at the top of the wiki page. Anyway, I'll show you like this one, guys.
By the way, there's an American politician by the name of Pete Buttigieg or Buttigieg. His father taught at Notre Dame University, and he was a specialist in all this Maltese history. They are Maltese themselves. And the Maltese ethnicity or nationality, and so is Buttigieg, by the way, who was almost going to be the running mate for Kamala Harris as vice president. So he's pretty highly placed, Pete Buttigieg, or I'm mispronouncing his name. The Knights of Malta are integrally related to the Roman Catholic Church, to the Vatican. In fact, it's sort of a military arm of the Vatican, from what I understand. So in the case of Pete Buttigieg, he's very close to power. He might become the next president of the United States, for all we know.
You've got a super chat further question. He's saying he was referring to earlier on in the super chat, he was referring to the video Ancient Bloodlines, Contemporary Power. Professor Hamamoto interviews Lauren Moray for a wide ranging conversation June 15th, 2016. Is that someone you're going to get back on?
I don't think so. I think that talk is still on. It had a lot of views, and people are still interested in it for some reason. That is the interview that brought down the dictatorship of President Linda Cattahy at the University of California, Davis. And that is the interview that got the University of California and the head honcho, Janet Napolitano, who came right out of the Department of Homeland Security and was brought in as president of the University of California system, primarily to put one Daryl Y. Hamamoto, me, out of business. And instead, I flipped the script. Janet Napolitano went down. Linda Cattahy went down. And all the arseholes who were her henchmen left, including those in my department. They're gone. Because you know what? There are multiple knighthoods in the world, and I happen to belong to one, too. All right. I got some mojo behind. I got my soldiers too. It's not just the Freemasons, the Knights of Malta, and all these other characters. So I use all those that intelligence, but I'm just telling your audience this is because this type of information, this approach, and this understanding of the world and real politics, the Machiavellian world, it's very practical. It might save your career. It might save your life. It might save the American Republic. It might save the free people of planet Earth. But first, you got to get your head straight.
BB wants your thoughts.
That's interview. Watch that one. Yes. Yes.
She sounds like a fascinating guest. Look, would love to get her on over here. But BB's got a few questions for you. Your thoughts on London's court jester mocking Trump, the emperor has no clothes?
Oh, my gosh. I didn't see that one, but are you referring to Jimmy Kimmel? We have these.
Oh, yeah, that's the next question, Jimmy Kimmel.
Oh, okay. Jimmy Kimmel. There are these official court jesters. They're clown. Their job is to clown the public on behalf of the establishment, whether they're wearing the harlequin outfit and the jingle bell hat or a three-piece suit. That's their function for the establishment. And they serve a safety valve for the people in charge, right? Laughter. I wrote a book, by the way, titled Nervous Laughter. It's about television situation comedies.
Spooky wants to know if you think these hidden cabals use events like the Kirk assassination to farm energy or to manifest the evil will.
Say that again. I'm sorry.
Do you think the hidden cabals use events like Kirk's assassination to farm energy or to manifest the evil will?
Oh, to farm energy. I think they are harvesting energy and anxiety. Yeah. I think there's
manifesting
energy.
The evil will. Does that help manifest the evil will?
Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely. And they are studying it. They being the behavioral scientists at Stanford University, Yale, University of California, they're looking at it very closely because we are part of the experiment. We are the characters in the Zimbardo obedience experiments, right? All the ones we read about that happened 50, 60 years ago. What you're not aware of is that the experiments are going on and they left the lab a long time ago. They're being enacted in public.
What are your thoughts on Charlie's memorial? And Mrs. Fiji says it looks like a ritual energy harvest.
Wow. All I know is that the grass that was in front of the dais where Charlie Crook was has already been ripped off and replaced with bricks. It's been paved over with bricks. I don't know anything about a planned memorial, but that seems to be part of the process. Create a martyr, which you slayed, and then build that person a memorial, right? But they can be very powerful, the memorials. BB,
you've got BB's brain raising like a souffle, Professor. Thank you, BB. Susan's got a simple question then. Who sacrificed him?
Wow. If we knew, we wouldn't be speaking right now. I don't mean to be glib, but there are multiple forces that would benefit from Charlie Kirk being gone. I will say that I don't think it's Israel. All right, hate me for that, but I mean they're one of the interested parties, definitely. But the reason why I called Charlie Kirk a punk last time I was on, Mr. Atwood, I referred to him as a punk. Primarily because he was just a boneheaded, unthinking supporter of Israel. He was just repeating the Republican Party line, right?
Wasn't that when he was in his 20s and he had more recently had a change of heart?
He evolved out of that, but I don't think because he was changing that they would get rid of him. They would just keep him on a leash. There's all kinds of people out there who are ardent anti-Zionists, and they speak to the populace unmolested or unthreatened. People like Katie Halper, people like Max Blumenthal, people like Greg Greenwald. I'm sorry. Maybe because they're Jews, they're not going to be hurt. I don't know what the deal is. But there are tons of people besides Charlie Kirk who have a much more nuanced and informed critique of Israel than Charlie Kirk. They didn't have visibility, but they're still up there.
But he had such reach, didn't he, with the young people? That
he did.
Steering that in the right direction was perhaps more important to the vested interests?
Well, I'll go a little bit further. I'm saying the young people are not really interested in the politics of the Middle East or Israel and Gaza as such. They just saw him as a young exemplar that they could aspire to. I don't think they were really steeped into the finer points or even the basic points of the historic, should I say it, genocide that's taking place right now. I can say it now because the president of Mexico, for the first time, herself is a Jew, by the way, for the first time referred to what's going on in Gaza as genocide. So I can say that now. So but to answer your question, the young people, and I don't mean to diminish their intelligence, I don't think they have the level of sophistication to look at the different.
But even if they've not researched and looked at all the history, which is quite complex, isn't it the case that the majority of the young people are supporting Palestine? So that could have been threat. That could have been a threat that Charlie Kirk, if he had concerns about what was going on with Israel-Palestine, it could have been exacerbated if he'd gone down that that route more vociferously.
Mm-hmm. Well, that battle has already been lost by Israeli-based PR people, much of which are based here in the U.S. That battle was lost, as we saw in the universities, right? Most of the undergraduates who were protesting Israel got their message across. In fact, Trump had to weigh in on the side of the Israel lobby to assess, for example, the University of California, a huge fine saying we're going to defund your programs because they were unable to control the anti, or let's say pro-Gaza, pro-Palestinian sentiment that was taking place in the college campuses. That battle ended 2 years ago already, and the Israelis lost. I never thought I'd see that in my lifetime, because their public relations apparatus is so sophisticated and pervasive that I thought it was unbreachable. But again, history presents us all kinds of surprises and opportunities. That's a win. We should relish that and take that forward. The young people who have come to consciousness by looking at history for what it is. And we can enlist their aid in doing the forensic research to find out what's behind all this Operation Chaos. That's what they call it, chaos. Order out of chaos.
Amy wants to know, where does the professor get his information?
Well, I showed you some of the books. Most of them are academic books, but within the academic world, they're sidelined, right? So I always look at the marginalized sources of knowledge, not the main. Yeah, I look at the mainstream, but that's where I get most of my nourishment from. And I watch a lot of YouTube. And I watch the Sean Atwood, and I don't mean this in a glib way. I watch the Sean Atwood show because he's got the top, not me specifically, but he's got some really fascinating, important guests that are allowed long form to relay their ideas instead of little blips of information. So this is true discourse, true conversation, true knowledge. YouTube doesn't lend itself to it. I mean, I'm talking about the people who are popular in this particular platform. But if you want this type of information, you need an extended discussion like this.
We are the antidote to dinosaur mainstream media soundbites. All right, absolutely. So Susan would know, would Trump have any inside knowledge about Charlie's unaliving before or after? Perhaps after.
I don't think so. I think President Trump knows a lot less than people imagine. He's sealed off. He's just the president of the United States. But there's a second part of that. I think there are forces, and they're probably members of these secret societies, right, within the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the National Security Agency, the various cabinet positions, even his personal assistant, Susie Wiles, I'll give her and her name, as well as the different law enforcement agencies like the FBI, CIA, who are working against Donald Trump, and they're working against the American people, and they're working against all the sovereign, free people of the world. That is really the struggle that's going on right now, right? Let's not think about the Civil War as being the gray uniforms versus the blue uniforms, right? It's not the battlefield, the threat terrain is much more subtle than that. But again, it's coming from within. That's why it's so difficult.
Jojo wants to know, what are PSYOPs?
That's short for psychological operations. And it's a process that the OSS and the Central Intelligence Agency and other organizations use in order to enforce ideological conformity, beliefs, and behavior.
You've had a plethora of questions come in about digital IDs and ISO Swift upgrade, worldwide digital CCY. Are they going to put the capstone on the central bank digital currency? So that's digital IDs and digital currencies. What are your thoughts?
Well, I tried to address that question by presenting the largest portrait possible, and that is the state of Utah as being the physical location of all these different technologies that are being brought under one roof. By the way, while they're doing it, they're also destroying farmlands and the water resources, and they're damaging the air quality with their generators. And this is being done by all these tech bros who we worship, people from Jeff Bezos of Amazon to Sam Altman, ChatGPT. All those characters are destroying the United States and the world for these supposed security measures, right? And it's happening in Utah. That's why the ritualistic assassination of Charlie Kirk, that's one of the reasons why it was so important for it to take place in Utah, where the farmland being bought up by the thousands of acres to put in these data centers that range up to 1 million square feet. And they employ, let's say, maybe 150 workers. And I'm telling you that because they try to present it as being a job creation movement or improvement to the economy. Just the opposite. It's part of the digital reconquista or the digital techno-colonial, right? In British history, there was the enclosure movement where the common lands were taken over, fenced off, privatized, taken over by the lords with all their thugs. Well, we're seeing the same thing happening in digital space. It's an enclosure movement. And it's being done, of course, under the guise of protecting the public. That's where the battle is, ladies and gentlemen. And that's where we'll be recruiting the 15-year-olds. So, hey, listen, Junior, right? This is the ultimate video game that you can play. Get off the Assassin's Creed, right? And create your own society in RL, real life. I could see that happening.
Is Utah the place they discovered tons of lithium?
I'm not sure, but if true, that's probably a good place. Utah is known for mining resources, timber mining. Yeah,
I think we mentioned last time the nuclear power stations required to, fuel the AI as AI takes over. Mm-hmm. And I'm watching uranium prices just go up and up and up, and they're going to have to drastically increase energy production, aren't they, for this AI takeover?
Oh, absolutely, and of course the public is going to subsidize it through the increased power prices, energy prices, right? Before it's completely taken over, we are going to be paying money in for the infrastructure. This is the political battle of 2025, right? And as tragic as the Charlie Kirk assassination is, it's really diverting attention from this struggle right now. And I think that's part of the reason why he was knocked off, so that the takeover can be effected. Yeah.
Billionaire Robert Shillman, longtime top donor to Charlie Kirk, cut off funding just days before Kirk's assassination. Is this correct or just not true? I think that's something that Candace is analyzing, all of the different donors and what was happening with them. Yeah. Have you heard anything about Robert Shillman? Because he got the Ackman thing as well.
Yeah. Not specifically, but I do know that, and it, it's credible that the chain was being jerked so far as Charlie Kirk is concerned. Part of the strategy of the people who exert control is to lavish you with money, honors, and privileges. And then at a certain point, they will jerk the chain back so that you will, and once you become dependent on them, just to remind you who you belong to. And I think Charlie Kirk was beginning to chafe at the chain that was attached to him. Yes, that much I'll agree with. I don't know if that caused him to be assassinated, but he was making certain people quite unhappy.
Are you familiar with George Webb's investigation?
I don't know his investigation currently. You know, there's tons of people that are offering theories on various.
I turn my phone on and there's 10 theories are suggested every day about Charlie Kirk, and there's hundreds more if I scroll down. So yeah. Brightmoor, immediately following Kirk's death, Turning Point announced plans to spread the word, especially via Zoomers, is turning the re-traumatized gamers into soldiers, part of the plan too. But hasn't the gaming created a generation of people who just sat around and they're not physically fit enough to meet their military requirements, are they, to become soldiers now? Isn't America having problems getting enough people to fit the old requirements of because they're all sat around on the computers, not physically.
Very, very true. They're usually overweight and unfit, and not used to any sort of physical discipline. But that's part of the plan, because it's all going cyber anyway. They want those guys who never see sunlight, who are 90 pounds in weight, people who fit the profile of a Tyler Robinson, to be the new cyber warriors of the future. And the video games are part of the training. In fact, most of these early video games were commissioned by the Department of Defense to train people at a very early age to do instinctive shooting. Right. And they also used it to recruit into the Army. You can download a free video game, and then, of course, the recruiter gets your information, and they try to get you in and sign on the dotted line by the time you're 16. But I'm saying that we could use that resource that the military has identified as its own and recapture it for ourselves, for our own use. And a lot of these kids are really smart. They can figure out if they're given enough information. Fortunately, because of the video games, ironically, that are being written by people with deep historical knowledge, like the guy from Cambridge University who novelized the Assassin's Creed. Fortunately, they're already knowledgeable of this history, and they can be a part of it, but for the forces of good, not evil.
All right, next question. When you look at the footage of Kirk being rushed to the car, there is zero blood, no blood on the ground, nor on those men carrying him weird. What are your thoughts?
Well, what I saw, there was a lot of blood that came gushing out from the front of his neck. So I don't know. I don't know what that implies. Too much blood, not enough blood. I will just go back to my earlier statement that a lot of the attention that's being paid to exclusively on ballistics and forensics, I think it's misplaced. I want to know the networks, the political networks that are behind this.
And when it comes to bullets, they can do very strange things. They can travel in weird directions once they go inside somebody's body. And sometimes there's minimal blood, and sometimes they can hit something and there's a hell of a lot of blood. So Ray J is saying, do you see similarities between the Kirk and JFK cases investigation-wise?
No, because the public has bypassed the FBI, whatever commissions they want to convene. They're not even talking about their... We as a public have figured out that the government are the perpetrators of these operations, or elements within the government and military and corporations, private corporations, are always involved at some point.
Is Ms. Kirk going to be summoned to the Hamptons?
Thank you for your super chat. I don't know. All I know about the Hamptons is that people take all the rich and beautiful people, take Ozempic, and then they have accidents where they soil the bed. You've heard of that story?
No, I have now.
No. Okay. All the beautiful people are browning out at the Hamptons. Yeah, because they're on Ozempic and it makes them they lose control of their bowels.
Katz wants to know.
It's poetic justice, yes.
St. Peter's College, Cambridge, was male only until the 90s, the last one. Mm-hmm. Templar concentration ?
Possibly because the Templars did advocate chastity, obedience, celibacy. So, and of course, these schools are notorious for being enclaves of same-sex love. And if, you know the symbol of the Knights Templar historically are two dudes riding ass cheek to crotch on a single horse. It's supposed to symbolize poverty. They are too poor to have two ponies, so they're on one pony. But actually, it can symbolize, you know what, buggery. And they were accused of this, but I'm not saying this is one of the reasons why there was a campaign about them. They were kissing the devil's arse or committing buggery and all kinds of other unspeakable crimes. Of course, the priests were doing the same, but they forgot about that. They left that part out.
Oh my gosh. What was that?
This is a fascinating history.
Do you think the shooter may have had a prosthetic mask on to look like the Patsy following the pattern set by Mission Impossible?
That's wild. I like that movie. Is that the one with, what's his name?
Tom Cruise.
Or the other guy? Tom Cruise-like guy?
Yeah,
I forgot his name. I think he died.
The Scientologist.
Yeah, well, no, there's just... Yeah, I saw the movie, and I understand the reference. Yeah, it's possible. I've seen videos where a believable disguise is used prosthetically. Possibly. But again, I don't know why it matters one way or another. I do think that Charlie Kirk, his wife, Donald Trump, all these people who are in the public eye, I do believe they have body doubles. That's probably more the case.
Right. Professor, you've been very generous with your time. We're at the 90-minute mark. Is there anything you'd like to say in conclusion to the viewers? What can they look forward to on your channel in the coming days? I'm going to put the link in the live chat again now. And all the professors, if you're watching on replay, and over 100,000 watched on replay in the last few days, the professor's part one on this. So please don't forget to click on the description box and then get subbed over to Professor's YouTube channel.
Well, I will just go back to my original point, and that is that the good news is that the American public, and I think maybe even the world public, is understanding that the government and the law enforcement and the military aren't going to provide any answers to anything. So we have the skills and we have the ability, we have the tools to do the research on our own. So that's really an encouraging development. That is the true definition of democracy, right? And I'm not going to engage like Ted Cruz and all these other characters and moralizing, oh, we need to speak and have dialogue. I mean, I'm sure, yeah. But all the moralizing we're going to be hearing over the next few weeks is nothing compared to the forensics that we're going to be bringing to the fore to get to the bottom of this issue. Now, I'll hearken back to one of your guests of previous weeks on the Sean Atwood Show. I can't remember her name, but I liked her attitude. She inspired me by saying, forget about asking for the Epstein list from the FBI. we are going to come up with our own damn list, and we're going to release it. I said, yes, that's exactly the attitude we need. And so I think, I want to tap into the natural anarchism of the teenagers and the young people of America and the world who are literate with all the gaming and recruit them into the side of liberty, not to the Republican Party. They're corrupt. They're bankrupt, you know, let alone the Democrat. Let's do it on our own. We can do it. That's my plea for the future.
Well said, my friend. It's always a great delight to have you on. A huge thank you for spending all this time and answering all the questions. And there was quite a broad spectrum of questions. So thank you, viewers. I shall let you get on with your day and close the show. So you take care, Professor.
Thank you, Mr. Atwood. We'll see you soon. Thank you.
Indeed. Cheerio. Thank you. Bye-bye. What a phenomenal guest. And we had an absolute blast. Thank you for all of your questions. Lionel, ex-prosecutor, was on the subject before the professor. So if you missed Lionel, when this one ends, it will take you to Lionel. And then in 2 days' time, we've got Jesse on Fire, who's just been doing some really viral videos on Charlie Kirk. He's coming on Friday evening, UK time. So thanks for tuning in. Thanks for all your super chats. Thanks for all your questions. Take care.